our main speaker for tonight, I am really excited about. If you've ever heard her speak or met her, you know, Annie Hutton always has a good word of advice for you, and it's really coming from a great place, and it's really helpful. And I've enjoyed talking with her through this process of getting her to come here, because she is so wanting to know what you guys want to talk about when it comes to marriage. So we've talked back and forth, we've exchanged questions, and she's just really wanting to hear from you, like literally tonight. So as she's up here talking, if you're thinking about questions, if she says something that you're like, I wish she would kind of go into more detail about that, write it down and think about it, because you will have a chance to ask her at the end. And that's like really seriously what she wants to do. She's like, please just tell them to talk to me. So we're going to give you a chance. So tonight's format will be a little bit different. She's going to come up and talk for a little while, and then I'm going to come join her, and we're going to have a little Q&A with some questions that we've already put together, and then we're going to open it up. So I'm serious, guys. She wants to hear from you. So be thinking about it while she's talking. So let me tell you a little bit about Annie, and then she'll come right up. Annie has been married to William for 31 years, almost 31 years, right? She has, what she says, three men children, two that are all grown, educated and working, and one that is still in college. She worked for Computer Sciences Corporation for almost 20 years, and then homeschooled her boys. And she has attended Emmanuel and participated in the music ministry for 30 years. If you were at church yesterday, you heard her sing special music for offertory. And now she spends her days discipling and mentoring and management consulting. So she's here tonight, and she's going to speak to us about marriage, and she's great. She's going to be super open, so get your questions ready for the end. Welcome, Annie.
Okay, so those of you who heard me sing yesterday aren't going to be prepared for my fake Southern accent. So, sorry about that. First of all, I'm just thrilled beyond words to be here with you guys tonight. Can you hear me okay?
No, go ahead.
Now, can you hear me okay? Thank you, Miss Ian Browning. I want more than anything to be encouraging to you tonight. I know in a group this big, the marriages are probably all over the place. And so I want what I've learned about being God's will in my marriage and what I'm going to share with you tonight to be helpful and hopeful and convicting where it's necessary, but mostly I want to be encouraging. Concur with Laura, if I say something that's confusing or frustrating or that you don't understand, please write it down and let's get it cleared up, because I want you to walk away encouraged. Let's see, I've been married to Bill for 31 years. I was older when I got married. We have those three men children. William, also known as Kiv, K-I-V, it's a nickname for my husband's mother's maiden name. And then Jackson and Samuel, 24, 23, 21, so I'm proof that old people can and do have babies, because we had our children older. I worked for Computer Sciences Corporation for 20 years, a global, high-tech, high-intensity environment, until I started schooling the wild things, or Penny and I call them the axe murders. And I mention this because that dynamic did have bearing on my marriage. I met Bill when I was working at the NASA facility down at in South Mississippi. He was from this area and was down there on a temporary assignment. We met, we got engaged 2 weeks later. We got married a few months later, and then 6 weeks after we got married, we moved here. So I need to tell you, Bill is not perfect, but he's almost perfect. He's like Mary Poppins. He's practically perfect in every way. And I don't deserve him. He's a blessing of my lifetime. And so, but I do need to tell you that he isn't always easy to be married to, because he's a man. And so, bless him, Jesus. And so I do have to tell you this story, and I warn Jen because this story includes Jen Dodd. And this will give you a little bit of insight to my marriage. So Jen Dodd is getting married. She's Jen Dodd then. And our good friend Hannah Easley has flown in from Nashville, and she's staying at my house, and we're going to Jen's wedding. And so we're standing in my kitchen, and we're all gussied up and getting ready to go to the beautiful wedding soiree of the beautiful Jen Dodd. And Bill comes in, and he's got on his yard clothes, and he sees us standing there all dressed up, and he said, where are y'all going? And I'm like, well, didn't you notice that Hannah was here, and we were going to the... And I said, well, honey, we're going to Jen Dodd's wedding. And he said, well, why wasn't I invited? And I said, well, you were. And he said, oh, I don't have to go, do I? So, Bill doesn't like weddings. He's never liked weddings. He did go to a wedding once, and it was when he married me. And then he said he promises that he'll go to the other three of our children. And so I think he may have been to a wedding. Wedding or two since. It's when I got that tank full, and I was sweet to him, and I could convince him to go. Okay, so I'm going to move quickly because I do want to get to the questions and the answers. That's always my favorite part. But I have a quick overview of what I'll talk about. My relationship with the Lord, these are the things that have impacted my marriage in the 30 years. What I've learned about love, and love what you said. So good. It's going to be right where we're going. What I've learned about being a helpmate, and what I've learned about submission. And so I need to express right now, I love my husband, I love my marriage, I'm thankful to the Lord beyond words for the marriage that he's given me and the husband that he's given me. But the Lord gets all the glory. He gets all the glory for the joy that we have. There were times when the joy we have was hard fought. And that was mostly about me not understanding relationship, my role in the marriage, the relationship role in the marriage. The Lord gets the credit for what we've done, and I'm so grateful to him for showing me the motivation so that he could enable me to do the beautiful things that he's done in my life. And even as I say it, if you think of me, I would love for you to pray for me and pray for my marriage, because what we have today is because of what the Lord's given us today, and tomorrow is a new day. And if we don't stay in the Word and in our relationship with the Lord and in obedience, that could change tomorrow. And so I covet your prayers for our marriage. Oswald Chambers says, the amount of joy that we have is in direct proportion to the amount of obedience that we have. And so when we have joy and when we have obedience, it's because the Lord was faithful to keep his promises to us. So starting number one, my relationship with the Lord. This drives the abundance in my marriage. It's the priority of my life. The Lord tells us to pursue a relationship with him as if our life depended on it, because it does. Jesus is not a part of my life. He is my life. I need to know who he is. I need to know who I am in him. If I can't obey his words, I can't obey his words if I don't know what they are. And I can't be his will on the planet if I don't know what that looks like practically. And sometimes, for most of us as believers, this is not as much about wisdom as it is about obedience. I used to tell my boys, you don't have a wisdom problem here. You just have an obedience problem. They knew right from wrong. And a great example of this in a group of lovelies that are married is contention. We know when we do it, it's wrong. And as wives, we all have it in us, because when God cursed the relationship aspect of Eve with Adam, he didn't curse Eve. He cursed the relationship that she had with Adam. And when he did, the results of that is what contention looks like. Us trying to rule over our husbands and boss them around and get from them what we want. And it doesn't seem very smart, but we all struggle with it. I used to tell my boys all the time when they were little, they finally told me to stop telling them, Do not marry a contentious woman. Do not marry a contentious woman. And so it was wisdom for them, but it was mostly a reminder to me. So we're in the grocery store, and I have Sam. He's my youngest, and he was about almost 3, I think, and he was right there in the little cart in the buggy. And there's this little girl on the floor, and she's just throwing a temper tantrum. I mean, she's just in meltdown mode. And so we eased on by, and I was praying for him, you know. And Sam leans up to me, and he said in his little quiet hutting voice, and he said, "Mama, is that a contentious woman?" We know, even as we start down the path of contention, that it's wrong. And so what I've learned is the sooner that I can get through that little crisis of belief in my inner world, that place where I'm struggling with, will I obey God or will I just do what I want? Do I value the joy and the abundance that comes from the obedience enough to do it quickly? And the goal is to get through in a second or two. And sometimes it takes an hour. And I've seen marriages where it took years, creating lots of destruction before they could get back to redemption. So the sooner we get to obedience, the sooner we get to God moving us powerfully to enable us to do what he's called us to do. So my relationship with the Lord is systematic, it's strategic, it's tactical, it's a serious effort. It's systematic in that it's organized and regular. It's strategic in that I'm not waking up every morning willy-nilly saying, "Wow, I hope today is going to be okay. I hope it's better than yesterday." It's tactical. There's a maneuvering here. And a good example of this is one time my boys were young. I think they were probably 2, 4, 6, and they were in the basement. And my middle boy is Jackson, and he was just screaming at the top of his lungs, "Mama!" And he's 23, and he still kind of does that some. And he doesn't eat penny. He does. Piece of work, that one. And so he was just hollering at me, and I heard Kibby, the older brother, say, "Jackson, be quiet. Leave Mama alone. I think she went upstairs to pray for patience." So sometimes my serious tactical effort looks like removing myself from the event. Sometimes my tactical move looks like moving back in. So my children were probably about that same age, 2, 4, 6-ish. And I'm having an altercation with Bill. We don't do it a lot. We have had a few. And this was one of those toe-to-toes. And I'm not quite sure what it was about. I'm sure selfishness. And I was going out to dinner with my discipler, Nancy Welch. And I don't know how many of you know her in here. Attila the Hun, the discipler. And I'll talk about her in just a minute. But I was out the door, and I got in the car, and tears rolling down my face, and I'm so sad and frustrated, and leaving him with the critters by himself. And Nancy's like, "What is the matter with you?" And I was like, "Oh, he's just so mean, and he's hurt my feelings." And she said, "Well, go back in there and tell him you're sorry." And I'm thinking that's exactly what I do not want to do. And so I'm not as agreeable to that idea. And so she says, "Go back in there and tell him you're sorry." And so as I sit there still in my crisis of belief, trying to decide, will I do what's most right or will I not, Nan Kay pushes her car seat back like this, and she crosses her arms and she closes her eyes, and she's like, "When you go back in there and tell him you're sorry, we'll go to dinner." So I get out and I go back in and I open the door, and he's standing there with one in his arms and two in his legs, and he's headed to the basement. And the hope on his face, and he thought I was long gone and we were broken. The hope on his face, it was a spiritual marker, an Ebenezer in my mind. I'll never forget it. I get goosebumps talking about it. He melted I'm so sorry, I was wrong, I'm so sorry too. He was sick at the thought of us being broken for the several hours that I would be gone. And then I was impeding his relationship with his children. He gets, my husband traveled abroad all through our marriage when our kids were younger. And so he had very little time with his children. And so I was impeding the few hours that he had alone with his children. I am so thankful for the lesson that she taught me that night, among a thousand others. But this one showed me the power of sacrificial love. And it made it much easier over the years to do it over and over again. So I'm pursuing my relationship with the Lord as seriously as I would approach anything worth doing. And we can talk later if you have questions, but here's what I would recommend quickly with regard to that. Assess where you are spiritually, know your weaknesses. Know the strongholds, know the places where you struggle most. This is an ongoing process. Any of us that are older know that we have seasons where we constantly have to go back and check our motives and our heart issues. And since it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, I have to tell you, I have a great friend, very mature, very serious, wonderful helpmate. And she's married to a really wonderful guy. And a number of years ago, right after Valentine's Day, she admitted to me that he didn't get her a Valentine's Day card. It was shocking, given the nature of these two people and their relationship. And so I began to ask her, what happened? What was going on with you two? And she's like, she began to describe to me all of the things about him that were frustrating her. And she's got a lot on her plate, and so I understood in that season that these would be. But I just laughed out loud. I was just completely tickled, and I was like, he hasn't changed one iota. This is exactly how he always is. You've changed. You've lowered your tolerance. You've lost your wheelhouse. And she has such a great heart for the Lord and a great heart for the truth. And so she went home and she rallied. And about 4 days later, I got a text message, and it was a picture of a note that her husband had written to her. And it was the sweetest, most lovey-dovey, you're so awesome wife note. It was 1,000,000,000,000 times better than a Valentine's Day card. And it only took her 3 days to write things. She just needed to be motivated. So you deal with your strongholds first, and you do this with God's word. If you've got a helper, someone that can help point out what your issues are, God's word is powerful. It doesn't return void. There's great hope there, and it's supernatural. I can't convey that strongly enough. The more I become like Christ, the more my moment-by-moment attitude is the attitude of Christ Jesus, the better equipped I am to be helpmate to Bill. And the more I become like Christ and the better equipped I am to help him become like Christ, the more we become like Christ together, the more we look like each other and become like-minded. And a like-minded husband and wife looks like joy and abundance, Christ in the church. And it's a great witness for those around you, and I don't think I need to say what a tremendous godly effect this has on children involved. Okay, so number two, love defined. I think a discussion about love has to start with what love is and what love is not. 1 John 3:16 says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. So God, who is love, defines love as sacrifice. But the love sacrifice that we're called to garners gain and victory. Jesus sacrificed everything for us to gain everything. We can talk about what this looks like, so if you have questions, write them down now. But let's focus on love God's way for just a minute. This is 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous or boastful. Love is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It doesn't rejoice at wrong, but rejoices at the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. I don't know about you, but for me, there's some sacrifice involved in that. So love becomes a choice. Do y'all know the song, Andrew Peterson's song, Dancing in the Minefields? Are y'all familiar with that? I do are the two most famous last words, the beginning of the end. But to lose your life for another, I've heard, is a good place to begin. Makes me want to sing all of a sudden. Because the only way to find your life is to lay your own life down. And I believe it's an easy price for the life that we have found. And we'll go dancing in the minefields. We'll go sailing in the storm. It's harder than we dreamed, but I believe that's what the promise is for. The only way to gain your life is to lay your own life down. And I believe it's an easy price for the life that we have found. Love sacrifice equals joy beyond measure. I wrote those lyrics, Dancing in the Minefields, on my mirror. Now, I write things on my mirror all the time. Billy is very accustomed to seeing me write things on my mirror, and I write things on his side too sometimes. But he clearly had not heard the words of this song. And so he pointed to "We'll go dancing in the minefields," and he said, "Do I need to be worried about that?" So then I gave him a copy of the song. So love is a choice; it's not a feeling. Feelings are important, but they need to be indicators. Their indicators are of, am I in God's will or am I not, or will I do God's will or will I not? So if a feeling is telling you to do something that is sin, it can't be love. It would have to go into a different category. I used to say to my boys, "Well, do you feel like hitting him?" And he was like, "Yes, ma'am, I do." And I was like, "Well, your feelings are lying to you then, because God doesn't give you the option of hurting your brother." Our hearts deceive us, but 1 John says that God is greater than our hearts, and that's a promise that we can count on. So a quick aside about romantic love, because I did get some questions about that one. The experience of being in love, I think if you've ever had it, you know what I'm talking about. C.S. Lewis says in the book, that's my book, my list of resources, it's up there somewhere, I think, The Four Loves by C.S. Lewis. And he, a great book on love. And he says, if that kind of love lasted forever, nobody would ever get anything done. Being in love is an experience that is used by God. And then we get the opportunity to express sacrificial love. And this yields love results that focus more on God and his plan for us, and yet it gains for us a love relationship that looks like Christ in the church. So the being in love feeling is important. It does have its purpose in God's scheme. But what comes after is not less appealing. It's more real, it's more compelling, it's more valuable, it's more sustaining, more substantial, produces more joy and abundance. This is a love relationship that yields trust and respect and intimacy on a myriad of levels. And yes, it does still include that make my heart stop reaction. And I see that more and more now, like I did in the early years. And I think those of us who've been married for a long time will all agree with that. That there are times when Bill used to travel a lot overseas, and if he came home and I flew in on a Wednesday night, he knew we would all be right here. I'd be in the choir room and my kids would all be in the nursery, and he would stick his head. I hadn't seen him 6 or 7 weeks, and he'd stick his head in that choir room door, and I'd just have a heart attack. It was horrible. Wow. Okay, let's talk about helpmate real quick. So I need to start off by saying, and I think I did mention that I was blessed beyond imagining right at the beginning of my helpmate role, within a year of being married. We moved here to Northern Virginia, and within the year we found Emmanuel. We came on Sunday, I joined the choir on Wednesday, and the Lord plopped me down by one Nancy K. Welch. And the rest is history, as they say. For those of you who don't know her, all I can say is I'm just so sorry. Eternity will provide you with an opportunity to get to know the one and only. But from the moment that I sat down by her, she stayed on me like white on rice. She showed me, taught me, demanding of me to be Christ-like. She patiently, lovingly, earnestly beat me about the head and the ears. She let me get away with nothing. And there were a few tears along the way, but mostly we were just laughing all the way. She is a gift of a lifetime. And so along with her tutelage and others like Penny and Joanne Owens, and with God's words, great teachers like Michael Easley and John Piper and Tim Keller and C.S. Lewis and Spurgeon and Oswald Chambers, and 30 years of marriage, this is what I want to tell you about helpmate. First of all, the word helper that's used to denote helpmate is the same word that's used for the Holy Spirit as helper. If God is in this role, it's not a secondary role. This is a role that's by God's design. It's a powerful role. When God gives us a role, there's a supernatural component. He enables us to do what he's called us to do. The helpmate role is a privilege. It's a responsibility. It's a God-powered obligation. When God created Adam, he gave him his work. That was his primary role. And when he created Eve, he gave her relationship with Adam. And so these are two very different objectives on the planet. His is to provide, ours is to be relationship broker. And so I'm pretty sure I don't need to express that in these different roles, we see that men and women are different. And if you have boy children and girl children, you know this. We raised the three boys, and I learned from them to show grace to Bill, because I could see the evidence, how different they were. And Jackson, I would go outside, and he'd be swinging from, he's the one that got hit in the face with a machete. That's a story for another day. Machete boy. And so he is swinging from something, and I'm saying, quit, get down, you're going to get hurt. And he says, if there's no risk of getting hurt, why would I even bother doing it? Jackson. So by God's design, our men need our help, because we bring something to the table that they don't have. They're different and they need us. And you know, they bring something to us that we don't have. They're different. Bill was coming out of the bathroom a couple weeks ago, and he had consternation all over his face, and he said, I am just so frustrated. And for those of you who know Bill, he is the most even-tempered, rock-solid, happy as a clam, you cannot ruffle my feathers kind of man. I've been married to him 31 years, and I've never once heard a profanity come out of his mouth. He is steady as he goes, and I'm thinking, wow, something bad's happened. Work's gone south, the house is falling off the foundations, one of the boys is in jail. And he said, I was like, what, honey? And he said, I just can't believe that the San Diego Chargers are moving to Los Angeles. They think differently. What they value is different. They can't give us what they do not have to give us. And we need to accept that, but more importantly, we need to embrace it, because it's God's design. We both bring things to the table that complete us. So God gave us to complete them, and them to us to complete us, and all of this is to God's glory. They need our help to be God's man. They need our help to be God's glory. They need our help to show them how to love us like Christ loves the church. And then they need us to motivate them to want to do that. It's a tall order to love us like Christ loves the church, and we don't need to make that harder than it already is. A helpmate is powerful. She's influential. A helpmate is a solution to the problem. She doesn't go inward when faced with a tension. That tension is God pulling you this way and self and Satan pulling you this way. She stays outside self. Jesus will take care of her. She stays outward, and she focuses on resolution to the problem God's way. She doesn't allow herself to become part of the problem. She's the relationship broker in the home. A helpmate embodies 1 Corinthians 13, that love chapter. She embodies Proverbs 31, his heart is safe with her. He is lauded by others as he takes his seat among the leaders because he's married to her. Her focus is on her husband in a helpful way. She focuses on his frailties, but only for the purpose of helping him away from them. She encourages his strength. She's a force to be reckoned with. She's empowered by God's enablement as she moves in God's will from moment to moment. And we can talk about this, so you can write your questions. I'd be happy to answer the questions about that. But in my life, here are some things that help me be helpmate. We had regular porch days. It wasn't a fixed thing, but it was a regular thing. It was a loose but scheduled forum where I always knew that we would eventually get to time together where we could pick the bricks up that were accumulating between us and needed to be tossed out to keep the wall from coming up. Porch dates built intimacy. It strengthened our relationship. I could hear his heart talk to me. I'm determined to be Billy's biggest cheerleader. No one is going to out-cheer me. I will be his biggest fan, and he'll know that. Number three, I'm determined to love what he loves. I may not get on a bicycle and follow him 100 miles out to Percival, which he does on a regular basis. But I don't complain when he does it. I'm so proud of him for his effort. I'm amazed at his fortitude at 5:30 in the morning when he'll get on that bicycle with his suit on his back and it's 30 degrees and he'll ride into work and his car is in the garage and he could take it, but he doesn't because he likes the exercise and likes to be healthy. I buy him bicycle presents. I don't disparage his preferences. I mourn with him if it rains on a golf day. I rejoice with him when his beloved Green Bay Packers win. I mourn with him, and I do not make fun of him when they lose. I totally agree when he named our fourth German Shepherd together Packer. I'm determined to be easily pleased. When he bonks it up, I will step over it and keep moving. Bill says nothing makes him happier than to walk in the door and see what he calls bright eyes. It was a message that Mike Leesley did years ago on Proverbs 15:30. A cheerful look brings joy to the heart. And he says if he walks in and I have a happy demeanor to him, he knows that I approve of him. And he says my approval gives him all the confidence in the world. Number six, a helpmate makes her Christ walk her highest priority. Luke 6:45 says, the good man brings the good out of the good stored in his heart, and the evil man brings evil out of the evil stored in his heart, for out of the mouth the heart overflows. A godly helpmate trolls her heart and is constantly making an effort to store more good than bad, rooting out the evil. Then when she's interacting with her husband, especially under difficult circumstances, and she goes to her heart for a response, what she hits first is good. This is establishing good, godly behavior patterns, rooting out the behavior patterns that are unhealthy and destroy our joy and abundance. Lastly, I stay motivated as a helpmate. And here are some of the ways that I motivate myself. I remind myself that I'm modeling to my sons what kind of wife to marry. I also remind myself that I'm helping Bill to love me like Christ loves the church. I'm modeling, that models to my sons how to love their wives. Moms that have daughters, you're modeling to your daughters how to be helpmate. They're organically absorbing this. They are very spongy learners. I also keep a list. Mike Leesley talks about this. He used to be our pastor at Emmanuel, for those that don't know him. And he says he keeps a list of pastors who have fallen in the front of his Bible as a reminder of how close we all are to just breaking and falling apart. And so I keep a list of marriages that dissolved into disaster, and especially the ones who have come back to me and said, I wish I had not left. I wish I had stayed and made it work. Now I know I could have. What I have gained by leaving and moving on to the next is not worth what I lost. I had someone tell me one time, I wrote this down too, well, I wish I had just stayed and been miserable. And this was a person that I could easily say to because we love each other, or you could have stayed and been happy. Okay, submission. This is misunderstood, misapplied. So I want to say here that the submission I'm talking about is by God's design. So submission, God's way, is like all things that are by God's design. It's a good God thing. And he's made a way for us to be successful, to be his glory in our submission. So first, our submission is to God. As Christians, we're bought at a price. We owe him everything. We're submissive to God because he's worthy. So we see our submission to our husbands as it passes through first through the submission to God. And what our husbands are really getting is a byproduct of our submission to the Lord. When we're talking about submission to our husbands, we understand that God is talking to the wives. And we know this because in Ephesians he says, wives, submit to your husband. So a husband who tries to use submission as a way to sin against his wife is not justified. Biblical submission is not a free pass to a husband to abuse or to control in sin or to be unchristlike to his wife. And we can talk about this later, but I'll say now, Cindy Usley's books on Dancing with the One You Love and what's submission got to do with it are a great source of help and hope if there are some extreme difficulties in this area in your marriage. I highly recommend you get those. But I do think that there's a rub about submission for women. Even if a husband is not overtly trying to use it to distort that concept for his benefit, I think as people we resent having to submit. It feels weak, it feels uncomfortable, it feels oppressive, controlling. The submission I'm talking about is not weak at all. It's used by God like all things used by God. It's holy, and it's powerful, and it's liberating. So the goal is husband and wife, and that's to pursue the model of Christ in the church. And in that model, there's clearly a leader. So biblical submission starts with a Christ attitude. It's powerful. There's no doormat or victim in this. For me, it's I voluntarily place myself under your leadership, and you will be more God's man because I'm there. And where you lead with me as rudder will take us both where God wants us to go. And so at the end of the day, in any organized system, a corporation, a business, a church, a family, someone has to have the final say, and that needs to be the leader. And that role belongs to the husband by God's design. And the leadership does need to be godly. And I can hear in your mind saying, but what if my husband's not? And that's what I love, my introduction to this, because the one thing I know for sure is that he can't lead effectively if you don't help him do it. So a God-designed marriage, the leader has to have a helper. And so if you don't have a godly leader, we can talk about that during questions. I hope we get to them all. That you can be used to redeem and restore and rectify. But the answer to the question is, if you're married to a man, then he is the spiritual leader, whether he's leading or not. And if he's not, I hope this would be your call to rally. God is with you, and he is in this with you, and he enables you to do what he's called you to do. So all is not lost. As a powerful helpmate, you can sacrificially love him, encourage him, influence him, help him to become what God has created him to become. And as you start doing that, you get God's supernatural help. This is not a drill you're in on your own. So if he calls you to do it, he enables you to do it. And I say this as a great encouragement, as a hope and a motivator. I've seen many disaster marriages become joyful and abundant when the helpmate got her God groove on. So our husbands are the leaders, but they can only lead if they have a following. So you know the phrase, if he's leading and nobody's following, he's just going for a walk. And so if your husband is leading and you're not following, he's going for a walk. So you're the rudder, you're powerful, helping God. A wise leader knows to ask for your input, but you may not have a wise leader yet. So your role as helpmate is to nurture the relationship so that he wants and heeds your wisdom, and that it's valuable to him, so valuable to him that on the days that he doesn't ask for it, but he really, really needs it, he's still willing to listen to it. And this isn't really about getting your voice heard so that you can get your way. This is about having your voice heard so that you can help him be God's will and do God's will and lead your family in a godly way. So here are some thoughts about things that helped me in my submission role to my husband. One, pray for him. God always responds to prayer. And when we pray his will, he gives us his will. 1 John 5:14 says that this is the confidence that we have. If we pray his will, he hears us, and if he hears us, He gives us what we ask because it's His will. Don't trade God's glory for a lesser glory. You can't use a sin, attitude, or words to accomplish getting something good or godly that really needs to happen in your family. God doesn't contradict Himself. There's a way to accomplish His will. You can get what you want as long as you don't have to sin to get it. I have a friend who always says, well, if I was married to Bill, my marriage would be really good too. And it makes me laugh, and I love this person with all my heart. And I said, no, the truth if it is, if you were married to Bill and you behaved in your marriage with Bill the same way that you behave in your marriage with your own husband, your marriage would look just like the marriage you have now, even if you were married to Bill. Helpmates are very powerful, and they can take good men, and they can steal life from them. I can just imagine me standing with my hands on my hip, ordering Billy Hutton around. I did not marry a man that I can order around. I'll tell you that right now. I try to be more concerned about doing right than being right. That gets easier as you see that God is in this with you. He's on the job, always about His business, helping you get godly things done in your home. And I always try to see an issue or a tension through Bill's view. That's easier to porch dates help me know His heart. So when He's talking, I can see the backstory. I also try to be more concerned about how Bill views me than how I view him. So instead of focusing on his frailties, except for noting where I need to help him away from them, with love and encouragement, I focus on my frailties, and I beg God to show me my blind spots and sanctify me. Let's see, change the narrative in your head. What we practice in our thoughts, the words that we say in our inner world, the words that we practice become permanent. They don't become perfect. Practice makes permanent. And if we're practicing sin, it can't be perfect. So we demolish the lies that set themselves up against God's truth, and we take our thoughts captive in obedience to Jesus. And that is not going to allow lies about our husbands or the belief that we can judge or indict our husbands. We don't have that authority, only God does. So judge myself, discern in the actions of my husband where I need to help him. I also motivate myself to control the narrative in my head about Billy. I have a list, and it includes all the things that I love about him from the beginning of our marriage and all the way through. I remind myself that he's a gift to me today because there are friends here that I love whose husbands aren't with him anymore, that are with Jesus now. And it's a huge reminder to me that I still have him as a gift, and they would give anything to have theirs back. And so I remind myself what it would feel like to get in the bed every night without him, and I pray for my beloved when I do, because I know what that would feel like because Billy's gone so much, but I know he's coming back. So I write the things I would miss if the yard work, the way he takes care of the cars, he makes my coffee and brings it to me every morning, he puts gas in my car. I could go on and on. His love language is definitely acts of service. I write what I appreciate. One of the things that he did for me is he bought me a Thunderbird, and he surprised me. And I walked into my garage, and there is a Thunderbird sitting in my garage. A stunner. And so her name is Shiny. And so when I get irritated with Billy, I go get in Shiny, and I put the top down, and I ride around until I can't be mad at him anymore, because it was such a sacrifice for him to do that for me. He did all the research, and I mean, he loves surprising me. There's a downside to that. If I use Shiny to come to the church, which I don't do very often, or go to the grocery store, and Billy sees me driving up, then he asks me if I'm mad at him. And so, okay, Ready for questions? We have, I think the questions that you folks, and I put them in order, but if you, I think this is a good order.
Okay.
So, because I kind of wanted to cover, I was trying to spread them out so I could cover as much ground as possible, because I know we have very little time, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you had to have this. I have a few things.
Just have a little, I'm not gonna say, have a little conversation. So these are questions that we got from some of you all when we came up with, so we're gonna ask a few of these and then we'll open it up. So the first one, my husband and I don't agree on how to discipline our children, so what now?
Okay, so I think, and somebody said something about, I had shepherding a child's heart up there, and they're like, well, why would that be up there, because isn't that about parenting? But if you've got children, then your marriage is significantly impacted by children. Let me just say real quick, and then you can ask follow-on questions, and then we'll get on to the next one. But remember, men and women are different. They both bring something to the table where disciplining your children is concerned. So I have a great story about this. Billy was in Australia, I don't know, somewhere as far away as humanly possible on the planet as he could get. And I was coming home from choir one night, and I had all three children, and I had Sam in an infant seat, and Jack and Kibby would have been 2 and 4-ish. And so I stopped by 7-Eleven to get diapers or milk or something that I needed before I went home, and it's 9:30 and I'm exhausted. And so I get out, and I get the car seat out, and I get Jack out of his car seat, and I get Kibby out of his car seat, and I herd them cats into that store. And then I get the milk, and I pay it on the counter, and I'm keeping them from destroying everything. And then I get them back into the car, and I click him into the seat, and I get him in, and I get him in, and I sit in the driver's seat, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. And Kibby says, Mommy, you know, it makes you so tired to take us all into the 7-Eleven. Why don't you just do like Daddy does and just leave us all in the car? I told him that that the Lord gives them more angels to protect them when they're with their daddy. With all my heart, that's true. Okay, so that is different, okay? But who's to say which is safer, really, in terms of you're hauling your kids into a store in this climate? They're maybe safer locked in the car. He can see them right there. So my way was not necessarily better than his way. It was amusing. So the point is that Satan's great victory in families is to keep mom and dad misaligned. The boys were arguing one day, and they were little people. And I guess they were maybe like 7 and 9, the older two. And they were arguing. I said, quit arguing. I get sick of listening to y'all argue. Stop arguing. How would you feel if Daddy and I argued like that all the time? And Kev said, oh, well, that would be different. And I was like, no, it wouldn't be different. I just don't want to hear it. I'm tired of listening to you argue all the time. He goes, no, it would be different. Because when we argue, it makes you frustrated and aggravated. But if you and Daddy argue, it makes us afraid. Misaligned parents can rot the souls of their children. Both parents ultimately want the same thing. They want their kids to grow up and be good people, good citizens, godly Christian adults. So the best plan always to keep in your head, even in the differences, is modeling Christ to your children is the best parenting technique that you can have. And then pretty much everything else follows. When the marriage looks like Christ in the church, the parenting differences are easier to resolve. Any questions about that? Did I answer a question that was?
So the next one is, how can I make time for my husband when I feel exhausted and busy? Does anyone feel that way?
Okay, and before I leave that parenting question, seriously, that shepherding a child's heart, if you've not read that, I think you need to read that. I wish I had read it sooner. I think Cindy Easley probably told me to read that, and I didn't, and then somebody else told me again, so I should have listened. And it took me a few years, but once I read it, I've read it 100 times. And then he wrote it with the Trips, wrote Parenting. I've not read that one, but Age of Opportunity for Teenagers, and they're seriously good. Change your kind of books. How can I make time for my husband when I feel exhausted and busy? Is that the question? Mm-hmm. Keep perspective. This is a season, and I think perspective is very important. Heavenly perspective, and everything else gets thrown in, and that's a daily drill. I don't know if most of you, I don't know, so you don't know our story. My brother and his wife, a few years ago, were hit by a drunk driver, and their only child, Ella, was 5, and she was killed. And it has been quite the journey for us. It was holy ground for me. I went and stayed with him for about 7 months after my sister-in-law. She's Dr. Colonel Ann Precious, is what I call her. And she's one of my dearest friends, and she was just busted to pieces and needed help. And so I went down. And but if Julie was here, and she won't mind me telling you this because I asked permission, before Ella died, my brother in the Army, and he was deployed. He was in a war zone for 2 different tours while Ella was alive in her little 5 years. And Julie was alone. She was out on a farm, all alone, very isolated, just her with Ella all day long by herself, with a husband that wasn't coming home to help for a very long time. And I went down several times just to, you know, provide some support. But I used to tell her during those days, embrace the ordinary, embrace the mundane, embrace the boring. Because there are people who have extraordinary stories that are really, really hard that would tell you that the mundane and the ordinary is God's gift to you. And if Julie, Dr. Colonel Aunt Precious, was standing here right now, she'd be saying what she said. Because she would give anything to have those long, hard, boring days back. 24 hours a day is God's design, and that's enough to do everything He's called us to do. So Ephesians 5:15 tells us to live purposely, making the most of your time. Process what you're doing in a day through that sieve, because some of our busyness is just wasted time. I had a great friend tell me one time, she homeschooled 10 kids, and I went to her house, and it was like clockwork. You've never seen such a beautiful scene. And that's a calling. 10 youngins. But she gave me counsel about homeschool that I think applies to this scenario, to this question, and that is, she told me, don't waste your words talking about homeschool to strangers or people who are not aligned with you. Keep those words to yourself. Save them. She said, you're not on a campaign for homeschool. God called you to homeschool. Just do it and don't talk about it. And she said, you need to save your words and save your energy and save your passion for your husband and your children. And I was like, wow. I can't tell you how that changed me. And so then if people would say something about homeschool to me, if we were in the grocery store line, I would say, we had dentist appointments today. And so I didn't have to get into a dialogue with somebody who may or may not be an advocate. Now, if I was somewhere and people talked about how obedient my children were or something like that, then I might tell them. Oh, yeah. That was a wonderful, horrible drill, okay? I'm glad I did it. I'm glad it's done. So let's see. Being joyful, being grateful. This is the day the Lord has made. There's joy in it. Even running alongside grief, we found it every day. Joy today needs to be acknowledged and experienced, and then it rolls over to tomorrow, and then you've got a spiritual buoyancy to carry you through the next hard drill. But if you miss the joy that the Lord has provided, and He says it's in every day, it's a mandate, this is the day I've made, experience the joy. If we let it get away from us and it doesn't roll over, it's a waste, it's a wasted gift. And so I think porch dates helped us. Does that make sense to y'all, porch dates? Yeah, well, we had deck dates before we had a porch. And I could go, I got a story about a deck I could tell you, but that's for another day. the 15-year deck. And so, but, almost a scar in my marriage. But anyway, but it's a beautiful porch now. And, but anyway, we would, you know, it was just, we found a place. When we lived in our little house in Falls Church, it was a deck, and we'd just sit out there, and I'd light a candle, and it was dark, and we could see out. We didn't have to look at each other if we had to talk about something hard, and it was much easier to be in the dark. We didn't belabor it. I was wily and wise. If he had a great day, sometimes I didn't want to mess that up with a, and sometimes that was the day I had to get him, so you kind of gauge it. It didn't need to be long. We'd put the kids to bed when they were little. We'd have a that word, and so so we could hear them if we needed them. And so, but the good news was, he knew that I was all about him. If I said, "You want to do a porch day tonight?" And if he didn't feel like it, he would just say no. And it didn't hurt my feelings because I was hurt too. And so, but he knew just a little bit of time. You don't need a whole lot. You know, it's like love. It just a little bit of it goes a long way. So a little bit of focus really does help him feels that love tank. I need to say taking care of yourself. What you eat, how you exercise, it's very important about how you feel each day. Not trying to live forever, but I do think we need to be good stewards of our bodies today to be able to do what God calls us to do. And that's a lot in the season that y'all are in. Okay, questions? Yes,
question. The next one is, I have a tendency to put my kids' needs above my husband's. Is this normal?
Yes, this is normal. Kids need to have their needs met. They do. And that falls to mama because she's home with them for the most part. She's the one that keeps them from drinking bleach and licking the bathroom floors. That was the case at my house anyway. So I think the answer to this question is, I believe this is really a heart attitude. Just don't try to justify sinning against your husband by convincing yourself that your children need you more. I think we're all guilty of that. He's aggravating and they're kind of cute and cuddly. And so, but God doesn't contradict himself. He does make a way for us to meet their needs and meet our husband's needs too. So I would ask your husband if he feels left out. Whoever asked that question, they've recognized it for so good for them. Our husbands get their life from us. They go to work, have the life bled out of them all day, and we stay home, and it's hard, but we're not getting bled out because we're with people that we love. It's physically exhausting, but we love what the people, for the most part, that we're around. And so ask him if he feels left out and what you could do to make him feel less left out. For me, I text Billy during the day. I would ask him, I would give him a choice for dinner. I didn't say what he wanted for dinner because he'd be like, he couldn't think about that. He had to work. And he didn't care what I fed him anyway. He likes what I feed him. I was just showing him that his preferences matter to me. I put notes on his mirror. He never goes on a travel trip without lots of notes all over the place. I surprise him. I stick them where he'll see them for the 3 or 4 weeks that he's gone. When he's at home, he works at home, I check on him. He never says he wants anything. He goes, "Is there anything I can get?" He always says no. He knows I'm busy, but he loves to know that I care enough to walk in there and put him first. When I show him attention, it frees him to show me grace. It fills up that love tank. And it just blesses him when I ask. Making him a priority helps him feel like he doesn't need to complain. I never disparage him in public. This builds a reserve of affection in him. His heart is safe with me. And when their heart is safe with you, even just a little bit of the time, it carries the day. Bright eyes, I think I mentioned that. So smallest gestures make huge impacts on them. They're busy too. They don't need us hanging all over them all day long. I wrote a note to Billy one time, tie a boy to a good man, and he'll almost always turn out right. And it was after a particular deal with one of our boys, and he was frustrated, hoping that he'd done it right. And I was like, you know, your overall role model to them is amazing. And I know at the end of the day, that wins the day. Well, I was in his car, and I put the visor down, and this was several years later. I dated the note, and that little thing came fluttering down in my lap. And he had just kept that note as an encouragement to him, just a little thing that I did. It was on notebook paper. But my words of encouragement matter to me, so the smallest gesture has huge impact. So I hope that answers the question. They're not really as needy as our children or as needy as we would like to make them out to be. They really just want to know that they're thought of, that we do consider them a priority in our life. Next question.
My husband doesn't take the initiative in being the leader of our household.
My husband doesn't take the initiative in being the leader of our household. How do I deal with this?
Okay, well, should I just skip this question, or do y'all care to hear it? Some nods, or I'll just skip it. It's a great question. It's very common. In most marriages where I've seen this problem, where the husband won't lead, is because there are other issues in the marriage that are not stable or healthy. Generally, the husband is discouraged, and he doesn't lead because he doesn't get the help to lead, or if he tries to lead, he doesn't get followed, he doesn't get affirmation, all he gets is criticism. He didn't do it the right way. So it's easier for him just to not lead. I gotta tell a story. I had a friend, she's wonderful. She was a whirling dervish, vice president in the corporation. She had two kids, she worked all the time. She took care of everything in her house. She paid the bills, she did the yard work, took out the trash, fed the kids, she did everything. And we were together with Nikkei, and she was, complaining about how she was a new believer, and she was trying to figure out what to do to get her husband to lead. And the words of the great Nancy Welch were, "If you want your husband to leave, you're going to need to get out of the batter's box." And I remember when she said it, my heart stopped, but there was so much truth in that. That she just was never really given him an opportunity to be the leader. So I would do a litmus test on the health of the marriage and see if this is just a symptom of other issues. Encourage him to lead small steps by asking his opinion, show your husband that his input matters, is valued, and that you won't reject it. Watch for opportunities when you see him exercising leadership abilities, that he's trying to cover the family, pounce on him with encouragement. Watch him do something, say, "Oh, I just love it when you do that." When my boys used to say, I would tell them to do something, and they would say, "Daddy says we're not supposed to do it that way." Now, if they weren't like, you know, I had fairly precocious children, as you can tell, a bunch of little axe murders, and so they, they might be trying to manipulate me on occasion. So if they weren't telling me something I knew clearly wasn't just a bold-faced manipulation, I would say, well, then we will follow Daddy's lead. If Daddy says we'll do it this way, then that's absolutely the way that we will do it. And they would say that to him. I mean, he knew I would tell them that because they would tell him, and he was very appreciative that I was, affirming his leadership. I think Cindy Easley's books would be helpful here too, toward submission that looks like helping your leader lead. So I hope that's helpful. Whatever,
we have like 15 minutes left, so does anybody have a question that you're burning to just ask, and you can jump in right there?
I don't know what we should talk about, but the rest of them I do believe that we've, I love this question. I have to say, it says, how can my husband share and I share parenting responsibility, especially since I'm home all day with the kids and he's only there with them a few hours? And I was wondering if the question was really, how can I get my husband to log more parenting hours? That's just me. I was just wondering if that's what, I wasn't sure what that question was, but yeah, y'all decide. Come on! A good question. Because that's kind of, if that's where you are, that's where you are. And so I think some investment time is necessary first. So obviously, if you are working on your relationship with the Lord and you are trying to maintain Christ's attitude, nag words aren't going to come out. So you would say, you could tell him the same thing over and over and over, and he wouldn't hear nag. You know what I mean? Because the words look like the love verse. I would memorize 1 Corinthians 13. I would memorize the fruit of their spirits. It's Galatians 5:22. Is that right? I would memorize Philippians 2, if there's any encouragement from being united with Christ. I would memorize all of the verses that speak to my areas of struggle. And if you're applying love that way, I mean, you're investing that first. Now you've drawn his heart in. And once, I mean, I can remember saying to Billy, I wish I had some strings coming off my porch right over there so that I could plant some cucumbers right there, and then those vines would grow up right there. And I am not kidding you. I walked out on the porch the next day, and those strings were up there. And, I mean, and he's a fast-paced kind of fella, but that's what investing in a love relationship does, is that where he's really, really, you know, I'm doing for him, he's doing for me. I do have a good story about that. I have a friend that her husband left his shoes everywhere. Two under the coffee table, two at the back door, two under the kitchen table, four by the bathroom, outside the closet. And she said, how do I get him to put his shoes away? And I said, well, what I would do is I would put them all away if I wanted them to be put away. And she was like, I am so not doing that. And I said, I'll be his shoe slave for the rest of my life. And I was like, no, because then when he asks for his shoes and he says, where are my shoes? Then you say very sweetly, sweetie, I put them in the closet for you. Which ones were there? And I'll go fetch them for you. And she was still incredulous. And I was like, but you're discounting the power of God moving in that sacrifice, because they were both believers. And so the God in her convicts the God in him. And the next time he slips out of those shoes and starts to walk off, he'll remember. And I told her, I said, given the state of your marriage, it might take a few times. And then you can't be mean to him all day and then just do that, okay? But well, I guess you could. It's not going to have the same effect. But anyway, is that helpful? Okay. Oh, a hand. Miss Ann Briney.
You mentioned stepping over the pile. You explained that to me once. I kind of helped.
Oh, and you know what? You're not the only person. I did ask a lot of the young women that I've discipled over the years, to send me their question, their input, things that I had said to them that somebody talked to me that really helped them, and that was I had about four people say stepping over. I think the thing is our tendency is, if our husbands offend us, because this relationship is so intimate and our hearts are so attached, that if they it feels so painful. And so that's where the feelings issue comes in, because it feels so painful. But if my feelings tell me to hold a grudge, or to be hurt, or to go inward and not stay outward and remain the solution to the problem, then I've become part of the problem. And so I just made up my mind as a choice I would be easily pleased, and that if he me, I would just step over it. And it works because they are convicted. You're married to a godly man. I'm married to him. I've seen it. And if you're not, he'll come around. Because I used to have this recycle, and I had it right out by the door, right from the kitchen, and I'd throw my recycle in it. And one day I threw my recycle, was bawling, it hit the floor, and I was like, and I went around and I saw my recycle bin was around the edge of the corner. And so I put it back, and then the next day it was gone again. And then I watched Billy come in the door one night, and he had his coat and his computer and his bike bag and all the stuff, and he's like bonking into that recycle bin. And I was like, that's why he's moving the recycle bin. And so I left the recycle bin where he put it. Now I had to take two whole extra steps to go around.
Okay.
That's not that hard. And to watch him come in, I realized he's moving it. And so it was gone about 3 days, and then I noticed it was back. He put it back. And so I've watched him stumble in over that thing, and I was like, darling, you can put that thing around there. And he goes, well, you know, I realized that the reason you had it there was so you could throw. And I was like, well, I realize you're bonking into it after you've worked all day. I'm going to take that thing and burn it. I don't need that recycle bin there. But I just stepped over it. I didn't hold a grudge. And I have found sometimes Billy doesn't even realize he's hurt my feelings. And so it just fades on into the wind. And sometimes he'll come back and say, you know, I think the other day when I said so-and-so, what I meant was, that's so fulfilling, because then we know God's on the job. You know, he's working in him, and he's using me, and I don't need to admonish him, and I don't need to be pitiful, and I don't need to, I'm just still solution mode. Jesus will take care of me, and my job is to stay outward. Does that answer the question? Okay. Hope that's helpful. They were all my favorite. They were really, really good questions. I'm really proud of you guys for asking them, because some of them were hard questions to ask, and it shows that you're really trying to make these marriages work. I love this question. Have you ever wondered if you're married to the right person? And how do I cope or work through these feelings? I'm going to say, if you're married, you've probably wondered about that a time or two. I have to say, I really haven't. I've always known that I was married to the right person, but that's because our meeting and all of that, there's a backstory to that, my testimony, and that's a story for another day, but there was no doubt in my mind that Billy Hutton was it, and I didn't know it for the first week. He met me, and he went into the next office and said, I'm going to marry that girl, and then the next week, we started making plans for getting married. So we had a very clear understanding that we were supposed to be married. And it's kind of creepy, but it's true. We've only made it 31 years, so I don't know. We might not make it much away. But anyway, so if you're married, you're married to the right person. And I'm not being glib at all, because I know how hard it is if you're in a situation where you're really struggling. But God works all things together for good for those who are called according to his purposes. So if you're trying to do God's way, he's in it with you. And he tells us to stay married if we're married. And so he enables us to do what he calls us to do. He's made a way. I think about the couples who are perfect, and everybody's like, oh, they're so cute, and they're both believers, and they're both educated, and they're so awesome. And then they get married, and about 9 years later, they stop loving each other like Christ, and they implode. And then you see the people who are getting married, and everybody's like, that's not going to last 10 minutes. And so they find truth, and they start loving each other like Christ loves the church, and they're still happily ever after. So Christ attitude, Christ enablement, miracles happen. So if you're not Christ to each other, it's going to feel wrong. And if you are, it's going to feel right. I guess the point is that if you leave and you take your unwillingness to be sacrificial love where you are, then it's going to be the same where you go. And I'm sure you've heard that before. So the next one won't be right either. I want to say about four laws. C.S. Lewis, this is a really good point on this one. He says, he quotes Emerson, and Emerson says, "Do you love me means, do you see the same truth as me, or at least do you care about the same truth as me?" If you're pursuing God's truth and you're helping your husband pursue God's truth, then you begin to value the same truth. And so you'll begin to feel like you're married to the right person. I hope that's helpful. I don't mean to be glib at all, because you know, we've had seasons where, I have to tell you, I picked up a frying pan the day before yesterday, and it was, a cast iron. And my husband, who loads the dishwasher regularly, so who can complain about that, had put my cast iron on the dishwasher. Now, he already got fussed at because we have a lake house with the Pinkstons, and he put Opie's in there, and Opie's like, "Who put my dish?" And I was like, and so you thought he would have learned his lesson, but he, so I picked it up, and I thought, well, only thing that's going to work here, because he can't really, it's like me trying to distinguish bicycle parts, they all look alike to me. So I know these pans look the same to him. And so I thought, well, he needs a visual. So I picked up the pan, the cast iron skillet, and I was just going to take it in there, and I was just going to lay it on the computer in front of him. And then when he said, what'd you do that for? I was like, just to remind you, next time, don't put it. And then I knew he'd have that visual. But my youngest son was sitting at the island doing his schoolwork, and I was like, oh my gosh. My cast iron skillet's in the dishwasher, rust all on the outside. And I picked it up, and so I went through that process, visual pigmenter, and so I started marching into the study where my husband was, and Samuel said, Mama? And I was like, that's he thought I was going to go in there and hit him over there. It was very funny, because I mean, he had that really, Mama? I probably won't hit him. Happy that we're done, and I'm happy to be here. So
I thank you. And we, I ate into our discussion time, but I just couldn't stop listening to Annie and her wisdom. So I hope that's okay. So would you close up? Would you pray for us?
Absolutely. I was going to suggest that because we didn't pray before. I know there was some prayer, but I thought about and regretted that I didn't. I prayed all over you people, every single little heart in this room, every husband, every child involved. I've prayed for your mother-in-laws. So you've been prayed over before I got here. Thank you for letting me come and sit in front of you, and I hope you feel encouraged. I want that for all of you. If there's a broken heart in here, that's struggling. I'm Annie Hutton at Verizon.net, and I would love to encourage you, give you help and hope, because it's there. There's victory. God did not allow the hard things without already having made provision for victory. So doesn't matter how hard it is, the victory's waiting on you. Okay, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you, Lord, for being here with us tonight. I thank you for these lovelies. I thank you for their interest in the things of you by being here tonight. I pray for every heart. I pray for every marriage. I pray your great, supernatural, amazing, astonishing power into all of the cracks and crannies of our brokenness. And I just thank you for the privilege for being here with them. I thank you for the privilege that you give all of us to be your will on this planet. And I pray, Lord, that you show us how to do it well, motivate us to do it well, and help us persevere until we see you face to face. And we thank you, Lord, for loving us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Literally, I was like, we're running out of time, but I just want you to keep going. Let me give us a couple announcements, and then we'll see you next month. Our next topic for March, I'm sorry, I don't have the date of our meeting.
13.
Thank you. March 13th is our next meeting, and Shelby Olson will be speaking on the topic of shame and guilt, and her experience and her testimony with that. So it'll be a good meeting. So we hope to see you back there. I think that Michelle and Jen, do you have some announcements on activities to finish it out? Thank you. See you next time. Hey, ladies, real quick on the events. If you came out this past Saturday, we had a great turnout. I think the families and the kids had a good time at the pancake breakfast. There was lots of playtime on half of the gym court, and then also some crafts and yummy pancakes and everything to eat. And we were able to raise about $370 for the youth in their mission trip. So just keep that in mind for next year. We're probably going to have the youth back again. And so we also partnered with eMoms just to give them an opportunity to come out and have some fun as well. Our next event is going to be Pottery Night. It's a mom's night only. It's Friday, February 24th. We did it last year, and there's about 12 people that did it. We painted just a dinner plate. This year, we're going to offer two options, a spoon rest and then like an oval serving dish. Mm-hmm. And Anne graciously has put out samples. We'll print out some pictures, you know, so if you don't have an idea in mind, then you can maybe copy one of these pictures. Now, how this works is we're going to send out, and also let me back up, the email that went out this past week, I think, it had a link to the IBC website so that you could go on and pay for your pottery ahead of time. Because we need to get the money ahead of time, and then we'll go pick up the pottery and the paint and the brushes and bring it back here. And then after you paint it, we'll take it back to the pottery place. They'll fire it. Then we'll bring it back here, and you can pick it up on a table right over here. So to add on to that, I'm going to send out an e-vite this week, and that same link will be in the e-vite if for some reason you didn't see it in an email. And again, you just click on that, and you pay for your pottery. It's like, I think the spoon rest is maybe $27 and the oval is $25. That includes all the paint and everything that you're going to need, and the firing of it and everything. So just click on that.